My main goal today is to explain this sentence. Mean curvature flow is a reaction diffusion equation for hypersurfaces. So there's a bunch of parts, and a good way to accomplish a goal is to make it simpler, right? So let's say just like curves in the plane and surfaces in R3. Nothing is won by doing it in generality. So I need to tell you, well, what exactly do I mean by a curve or a surface? What is mean curvature flow? And what do diffusion things do and what do reaction things do? That's kind of the thing, right? So let's talk about what is a curve or a surface for us. Like, if I tell you a smooth surface, what's an example you think of?
A sphere.
A sphere, yeah. A sphere is a smooth surface. Maybe the surface of a donut. A circle is a curve, right? So what I'm going to say is, so sigma subset of Rn, so n is either 2 or 3 for us, right, is a hypersurface. If each point is locally like just diffeomorphic to Rn, Rn minus 1, if you know what I mean, but like it just means for each point, right, there is a neighborhood N of P. A neighborhood U in Rn minus 1, right? And a map phi from U to this neighborhood. And that's it. So, okay, where I mean a lot of things by saying map here. Okay, so like the picture, well, here's like a torus maybe. And here's a point on it. Now, I can get like a neighborhood of this point in this torus right here. Right? You see, so like now it's like a little circular region, right? And I can map that, well, my map goes in the opposite direction. I can map that to R2, to like a little region in R2. And that, you know, gives me a map between this little region and here. Okay. So I'm saying, like, every point, you know, looks like a little circular piece of paper with some curvature or something, okay, around each point. So, like, a curve, so this is a surface. Here's a curve. Right. Now, what do I want from this map? I want this map to be a bijection. So like each point in here goes to a unique point in there and back, right? I want it to be C infinity, so it's infinitely differentiable. And phi inverse is also C infinity. So what this kind of describes is smooth things which can't have intersections, right? They can't intersect themselves. So like you can't have something like this. Because here, this point doesn't look like, you know, this point looks like a plus. It doesn't look like just a line, right? Okay. So that's what a hypersurface is, right? So for us, it's either a curve sitting in the plane here or a surface sitting in three-dimensional space. So what's curvature? Let's see. Let's talk about first the curvature of a curve. Anyone know or think? First I wanted to talk about tangent vectors, right? So like, given this situation, how can I get vectors which are like parallel to the surface, like tangent to the surface. Do you guys know? Yeah, yeah. So like you can think of here, I can like imagine putting a, making a curve, so like a map from 0, 1 to this torus. That's like a smooth curve. And then I can take a derivative, and that gives me like a tangent vector here. Right? Right, the derivative of this map from 0, 1 into really like three-dimensional space, the derivative of that will be a vector in three-dimensional space, which will be parallel to the surface, tangent to the surface. Another way to do that is using these maps that we've constructed, right? So like tangent vectors, you see I have a map from like phi, so like let's think about the case of a surface. I have like this map and like phi of some little neighborhood of the origin in here is part of our surface. So if I look at the derivative of phi in some direction here, if I look at like d phi, let's say evaluated at x equals 0, applied to some vector v. So that's like, you know, every point here is getting mapped to something in this little region, right? If I think about moving in this direction, so maybe it's like, these axes get mapped to like this and this, right? So then if I think about moving in this direction, I'm going to get like a tangent vector parallel this way, right? And this will be a tangent vector at like phi of 0. Right. You see, that feels good. Okay. And then, since these surfaces are sitting in like a space of one dimension higher, there's what's called the normal vectors. And those are, a vector field on our surface, which is perpendicular to all the tangent vectors. Right? And unit length, let's say. So, you know, this will look like at each point here, you have a thing sticking out, right? Now, is that unique? Like, do these properties determine this thing? No, like, what else could I have done here? Taking it in the other direction, right? Make a choice of direction, right? And make the same choice everywhere, right? And usually what people do is if you have a surface which encloses some region, like, see, this torus encloses, you know, the region that would be, like, the actual donut, right? If it does that, people usually take the outward one. Right. You could have a surface which doesn't really enclose a region, right? Like a plane sitting in three-dimensional space is a surface, but there's no like region it encloses, right? Okay. So now, curvature, right? Curvature of a curve. So what is the curvature of a curve? Let's say curvature of a curve, right? So let's not think about surfaces for now. Let's think about this curve. Does anyone know how you can define the curvature? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you can look at this tangent vector and how it's going around, right? And this is changing, right? And I can look at basically the derivative of this tangent vector. How fast is this tangent vector changing? And that gives me curvature. Since I prepared it this way, I mean, you could equivalently think of this, right? The normal vector here is also changing, right? And it's going to be changing at the same rate as that tangent vector, right? So a way to define the curvature of a curve would be this. Right, so we have this is the normal vector field. Right, the unit normal vector field. And I can look at this. Okay, so here V is a unit tangent vector. Right? So like the like unit velocity thing. And I look at how does the normal change in that direction? And then, well, that's going to be a vector, right? Because it's like the derivative of a vector in some direction. So I'm taking the inner product of the unit tangent vector to get a number, right? And we call this curvature kappa, right? But let's think about this vector. It turns out this vector is actually already exactly parallel to V, right? Everyone feel good about dot products? Like, they tell you, yeah, how much two things point in the same direction? Okay. So this is actually already parallel to V. And the way you can show that is like, so what have I done? Yeah, if I look at this is that, right? The squared length of the normal vector, which I've chosen to be unit. So if I take the derivative of this in the v direction, so this is always 1, so I know this is going to be 0. On the other hand, there's like a sort of product rule here. So I can do this is going to be grad Vn n plus n grad Vn. Right. And these are the same thing because I can flip the inner product. So this tells me that like this thing is actually orthogonal to the normal vector field, which means it's already parallel to the vector field. Okay, so that's cool. A way to think about this geometrically as well, you have something called the kissing circle to the curve at a point, which is the circle which, like, there's a circle which approximates the curve to second order, right? So the tangent plane approximates the curve to first order, the tangent line. And the tangent, like tangent circle, approximates it to second order. And the curvature is 1 over the radius of this thing. Right? Although the curvature will be negative for this guy. At this point, right? And this will have positive curvature. Okay. You can also think of it like this. Imagine that you push the surface in the normal direction a little bit. Well, I mean the curve, right? Imagine I push this curve in the normal direction a little bit. So here, the normal direction is out here, right? So imagine I do like a little thing like this, right? Here, when I did that, I increased length, okay? Now, if I do that over here, if I push it in the normal direction a little bit, right, I've decreased the length, right? So the curvature tells us how much length changes if we push in the normal direction. So that's a nice geometric way of thinking of it. But I won't write down like the exact formula of how it does that, but you can really quantify that. Now, okay, curves are simpler because we only have one direction, right? But how can we talk about the curvature of a surface? Anyone already know this? Or guess? Yeah, that's the Gaussian curvature. So we'll get to that, right? Basically, yeah, I mean, you can look at the curvature in several different directions, right? There's this, like, what's it called? So for the curvature of a surface, you know, instead of just looking in one direction, we have to think about all the different directions. So there's this thing called the Weingarten operator, which is really simple. It's just this. So if V is a tangent vector to your surface, okay, this Weingarten operator applied to V is just the derivative of the normal in the direction V. Okay. So instead of just looking in one direction, we're looking in a bunch of different directions, right? That's it. And just like here, this thing will be this is also a tangent vector. Right? So this thing maps tangent vectors to tangent vectors. Okay. And it turns out, right, that W is, first, it's a linear operator, right? W is a linear operator. So like this is just that directional derivatives, you can add them, right? And it turns out it's symmetric. What that means is like, is this WV1 with V2 is V1 with WV2. Okay. Do you guys know what this means? What's so great about this? You have real eigenvalues. You have a basis, an orthogonal basis of eigenvectors. So there's an orthogonal basis of eigenvectors. So W1, let's say, and W2 with eigenvalues kappa 1 and kappa 2. Okay. And these are called the principal curvatures. So on the torus, it's exactly these orange directions that I wrote in, right? Or in different places, we can write it, right? So now here, in this direction, the curvature is positive, and in this direction, the curvature is positive. Using this choice where we take the outward normal. Positive curvature means you're like curving into the surface, right? Here, like, in this direction the curvature is negative, and in this direction the curvature is positive. Okay. So the product of these is called the Gaussian curvature. So Gaussian curvature and this has relevance to pizza, if you know that cute fact. But we can talk about that when we eat pizza. Today we're going to talk about the mean curvature. Okay. Which is kappa 1 plus kappa 2. Okay. So here, let's see. Here the mean curvature is definitely going to be positive. Here, the mean curvature might be positive or negative, depending on whether, like, it's more curved in here or more curved this way, right? Like, whether you have a fat or a skinny donut. Right. And this tells us how surface area changes. Once again, right? Maybe it's a little harder to visualize. Definitely here you can believe that if I push out this way, then I'm going to make more area. Here, like, here is the balance, whether, like, when I push in this way, I'll get more or less area, right? And that's exactly that. Okay. This is called H. Okay. And then we have something called the mean curvature vector. Which is H times the normal. Right? So here at each point, we have like a vector, maybe here you end up with negative mean curvature, then this vector will be pointing inside. A vector which is parallel to the normal and proportional to the mean curvature, right? There's something nice about this mean curvature vector, which is not true for mean curvature. Something mathematically nice. Which is that the mean curvature depends on whether, like, which direction we've made our normal point, right? See, if I negate my normal, I negate this thing, right? Whereas this doesn't depend on which direction I've chosen for my mean curvature, for my normal, right? Because if I negate my normal, I negate that, and I negate that, and negative 1 times negative 1 is 1, right? Okay. Cool. So, we have these things, right? So, let's talk about partial differential equations for a little bit. Let's talk about some, we're just going to talk about two important examples. Right? So a partial differential equation means that, so it's some equation, like everyone's seen like an ordinary differential equation, or like a differential equation, right? So it's some equation relating the derivatives of some function, but partial means that you have the derivatives of a function in multiple different directions. Okay? So I want to talk about two examples, the heat equation and the wave equation. Okay? And we're going to have some function u on R2 cross 0 infinity, maybe, to R. So I guess we can write it like this, right? And I'm going to think of this as time. And this is just the plane. So let's say you have x and y. Okay. Now, maybe you've seen Laplace and you. Is this. Okay. Now, hint, right? That looks like this in a way that I wave my arms, right? I mean, these curvatures involve some second derivatives, and I'm adding two of them together in orthogonal directions, okay? Here, I'm adding second derivatives together in orthogonal directions, I mean. So they have relations, and that's why I'm going to start by showing you this, right? So the heat equation says this, du dt is d squared u is Laplace and u. So if you know, you think of something like this, right? This is going to move down and become flatter, right? Because here the second derivatives are negative, so you're going to like become flatter, okay? And then the wave equation is d squared u dt is Laplace and u. Okay. So I want to compare and contrast. Okay. I want to compare and contrast. This equation is called a diffusion equation. Okay. This is a diffusion equation. This is like the stereotypical diffusion equation. This is not a diffusion equation. This smooths u in time. So if I start with a function which is maybe like pretty bumpy, and then I let it evolve by this heat equation for a while. Like, so at time zero, I have a really bumpy thing. At later times, I'm going to have a smoother thing. Why can that not be true for the wave equation? This, like, carries bumps around. Maybe, like, with it. Any guesses?
I guess. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
The other is acting the opposite.
Yeah. You mean like these are the like the opposite directions from?
Yeah, something like that. So that when one is good, so that in the first order solution of that should be sinusoidal.
Yeah. So you can like write out the solutions to this kind of explicitly, and you actually get like sine waves and things like that, which is a hint for why it's called the wave equation. This is a really slick fact about this. Imagine I now reverse time, right? Imagine I reverse time. The second derivative of u in time doesn't change, right? Like, you know, if you have some function and then you flip it, right? The second derivative doesn't change. If I have some function like that, then I look at, well, that, right? I flip the function. The second derivative doesn't change. The first derivative negates. The second derivative doesn't. So if I reverse time, I still get a solution to the wave equation, right? So this is like reversible. That means you can never have something like this would not make sense, because if I claim that things get smoother in time, well, then reverse time, you still have a solution to this equation, and now things are getting bumpier in time, right? So this is irreversible. In fact, If I had put a minus here, then the equation I get is like totally garbagey, right? Like, because like this is nice that you can solve it with any initial data pretty much. But if I put a minus sign here, then with most initial data, there wouldn't be a solution. And those that did would get worse and worse. Like, get really high derivatives. What else did I want to say about these exactly? Here you have this equation, ddt. So, if I integrate the size of the gradient of u over the whole plane, okay, this is like some sort of energy, okay? I mean, I'm using words from physics, but this isn't exactly right, but okay, right? And it's decreasing in time, right? So here I have something decreasing in time. Here, with the wave equation, you usually get things constant in time. Like, the corresponding energy here is constant in time. And that goes along with this idea that this is a reversible equation, right? Because there's no way I'm going to say that something is decreasing in time if I have a reversible equation, because, well, if it's decreasing, then I reverse time. No, it's increasing. Cool. So, I don't know. Have you guys taken PDE and done like explicit solutions to these and things like that? That's kind of fun. I don't know. How much do you talk about like things like this or this or PDE? Never. Cool. Okay. So that's what a reaction, sorry, that's what a diffusion equation is. So diffusion means, where's the red? All right, diffusion means, sorry, like heat equation. Okay. So what's the reaction bit? Well, the reaction bit means maybe it looks something like this. Here's a stereotypical reaction diffusion equation. So, well, here's the diffusion part, but then I'm going to put like minus 1 divided by u here. Okay. So, like, so this is the heat equation, right? But I've added this extra term. And what does that make us do? Well, like, imagine that we start with data like u of x, 0. So, like, sorry, x, comma, y, comma, 0. So at time 0, I'm constantly 1. Right? So if I had the heat equation, then this Laplacian would be 0, right? Because all the spatial derivatives are 0, and I just wouldn't move. But this will make me, like, one, I'll always be a constant, okay, it turns out. But then I'll have something like u of x, comma, t, sorry, u of x, y, t will be something like root 1 minus t. Maybe there's a 2 here. Something like this. Right? Basically, erase this, because we're a constant in space. And now you have an ODE, right? And maybe you can solve this ODE using whatever you want, right? Like, you can go ask someone to solve it for you. And then they'll tell you it's this, right? So this is changing in time. And in fact, this only exists for finite time. The solution only exists for finite time. No complex numbers here in this talk. Okay? Then this solution only exists until t is 1/2. Right? So that's the reaction part. Like, this thing is depending not only on how it looks around, but what it is, right? Okay, so reaction, cool. So, now, can everyone imagine what mean curvature flow should look like? I mean, if you close your eyes, can you imagine something flowing by mean curvature flow? Maybe. Were you trying it or were you sleeping? So what's mean curvature flow? Let's write it down, right? Let's write down the thing we're talking about in this talk. Mean curvature flow. What we have is a one parameter family of hypersurfaces. So we're thinking of like hypersurfaces. Well, for this talk, right, curves or surfaces, right, moving in time. So sigma t for each t and maybe like in just some interval, right? So like 0, comma in some time interval, right? Sigma t is a hypersurface. Right? So by which I mean a curve in R2 or a surface in R3. Okay. And each point on these hypersurfaces is moving in the direction negative to mean curvature. So, you know, for each P, we have that. Now, you should really imagine this as like the surface is made up of a bunch of points, and each of those points is moving, right? But it, like, the movement of the point doesn't just depend on where the point is, right? It depends on all the other points around it, the curvature of the points around it. So I told you before that this is like the Laplacian, like some sort of Laplacian-y thing. Well, really I should have said it's more like, so this is like negative Laplacian of P. And very, I mean, you can make that more qualitative, quantitative than I mean to. But it's like taking the negative Laplacian of the points. And so this, like the heat equation for surfaces / curves. Cool. So, let's talk about the properties in this thing. One property is it smooths things out. So, like the heat equation, right? So, if you start with like a sphere, but like a bumpy sphere, right? Or like a brain, right? Then you do mean curvature flow for a little bit. Those bumps will smooth out. So, basic properties one is sigma t gets smoother in time. Now, the previous talk had lots of application, last week had lots of application to like computing and stuff. So here's my chance. They do this thing, so imagine you get like an image, like you take a million pictures of like a person or something, or a rabbit. And then from that, you make like a 3D model in your computer of the person or the rabbit. But like the 3D model has some noise, right? So like there are some bumps that, you know. And so if you want to get like a simpler model, which is easier to store and deal with in the computer, what you can do is like do mean curvature for a little bit of time. And that'll smooth it out a little bit. So that's our application. Okay. There's another application, but it's a pure math application. I mean, there's more applications. Well, another application is, so, physics interlude. Physics interlude. This looks like how, this is kind of how bubbles move. So, like, if you have a bubble sitting in space, you know, it wants to be a sphere. But if it's, like, deformed a little bit, it kind of moves like mean curvature flow to become a sphere. Kind of bubbles. And closer is the way this first came about is people were studying grain boundaries. So, like, you have some stuff with which are, like, metal, but different with different bits, different types of metal. And then you, like, heat it and then cool it, and does these boundaries move by mean curvature flow. Cool. Okay. End of physics interlude. Property number two. One. Two. You lose surface area. Or if it's a curve, you're losing length, okay? So area or length, right? So in fact, I can write down an equation for how you're losing surface area. So one, here I'm integrating over this hypersurface, my mean curvature. And so, I don't know, maybe you've taken real analysis and like learned how to integrate over lines or learned how to... but you know, you can define integration over a hypersurface sitting in higher dimensional space, right? Or any like manifold with like metric, you know, you can define integration pretty generally. But like intuitively this means I'm taking the total mean curvature squared of the surface, right? And this should be, why are these contradictory? So, right now. Yeah, this is a positive number, right? So this says that area is increasing. I meant to put negative here, right? Just like I meant to put negative here. And I did put negative over there, right? So I said before that there's like a quantitative way of saying how much area changes when we push in a normal direction, right? And this is coming from that. Okay. What's another property? So, and then this is like an energy, quote, energy. So this looks like a heat equation type thing, right? Some energy is decreasing. So does this, right? Avoidance principle. So if you start with two disjoint things and you flow them by mean curvature, then they're disjoint for all time. So if you start with disjoint things, they stay disjoint. And let's see, has anyone heard of the maximum principle for the heat equation? Maybe you've heard it like said. But this is another analog of the heat equation. Like the heat equation has a similar property. And there's a nice picture proof of this. Okay? So let's start with two disjoint things. Okay. Now, here's sigma naught, and here's sigma naught tilde. And let's say that at some point they hit each other, right? At some point they touch. Let's think about the first time they touch. Right? So I'm doing a proof by contradiction. So maybe this one looks like this, and this looks like this. Well, this couldn't have been the first time they touch, right? Because, well, basically by continuity, right? Like when they first touch, they're going to have to be tangent. So in fact, the picture should look something like, let's say, maybe it looks like this. So they have a point here where they're tangent. Now what's the contradiction? The one inside is more curved, right? So that's going to be the mean curvature vector for inside guy, right? And then this guy will have a smaller one, right? Which means this one would have had to be moving faster than the one outside, which means that this isn't the first time that they touched, right? Contradiction. Okay. So that's the proof. Here's another basic fact. So the sphere of radius 1 becomes sphere of radius root, what, 1 minus 2 and t. So 4t. Here this is for the surface sphere, right? The circle would be root 1 minus 2t. But those are just numbers, right? But the point is, this is a sphere that gets smaller and smaller. The rate at which it gets smaller gets faster, and it becomes a point in finite time and disappears. Okay. So that's a singularity, and there we're seeing the reaction part of this equation, right? So like it's got a positive feedback loop where it's getting curvier and curvier as it gets smaller, and so it's getting smaller at a faster rate. Now, combine this fact and this fact, and take any compact surface. What that means is basically you can put it in some big ball, right? You can put it in some big ball, which means you can put like the sphere around it, and those start disjoint, so they have to stay disjoint forever. On the other hand, that big sphere has to shrink to a point. So the thing inside the sphere has to have some singularity. This equation has to break at some point for that smaller thing. Okay. So singularities are kind of inevitable. So now I want to finish up with two big theorems and then an example, and then we're done, right? So big theorem number one, big fundamental theorem. Okay. Any convex curve / surface shrinks to a point and becomes asymptotically round. Okay. So what does that mean? Like, first by convex, you know, I mean something. Well, you know, like a convex polygon or a convex curve. Cool. So this becomes like this, and then like this, and it becomes rounder and rounder. A way to rigorously talk about this asymptotically round thing is to change this flow so that you keep your area. In other words, rescale each thing so that you keep your area. So keep area, and it's going to look like this. So here's a sphere with the same area, and it's going to approach the sphere. So at first, maybe this looks like this, and then it looks more like this, and then it looks more like this, and it asymptotically approaches the sphere. Okay. So here's one. Here's another fundamental thing. In a curve, this shrinks to a point and becomes asymptotically round. So even if you don't start off convex, you eventually become round, which is pretty amazing, right? So like, here's why it's pretty amazing. Let's draw something like this. I mean, draw this curve. Okay. And you should look up on YouTube spiral, shrink, point, mean curvature flow, or something like this. This, look, so like the curvature is big here and small here, right? But it's really powerful that this thing, like, wraps, unravels, becomes convex, shrinks to a point, and it does that faster than the sphere shrinks to a point, right? By the avoidance principle. So that's cool. Now, this is not true for surfaces, and let's do one example of interesting singularity for mean curvature flow, and then we're done. Okay, interesting singularity. Interesting singularity. It's called the neck pinch. So you make something like this. So this is a surface with like an hourglass shape, or like someone describes it as a balloon wearing a corset, right? So these spheres here are shrinking. You know, imagine you have this part and this part and this part, and they all do everything separately. These are shrinking. This is shrinking because, like, if this is tight enough around, then this mean curvature vector is pointing in. So this part is shrinking. And you can rig it if you make this small enough so that this shrinks down before these are done shrinking down. So, dot, 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 some time goes by, and you have something like this. Right? And a fundamental question is, how do you go past here, right? So people do that. There are some ways to do it. There are lots of ways to do it. One way is surgery, where you like see that this is about to become singular, cut this out, and then like add on these caps here. And that's how you solve some things. So like Ricci flow is similar to this, and that solved the Poincaré conjecture. Anyone who talks about flows should throw that in at the end of their talk, right? That we won. So so that's the story with mean curvature flow. Sorry, that was long. Do you guys have any questions? Well, there are ways to get past it. Like, I mean, do you know One way to get past it, I want to say this because it's really cool. It's a really cool idea. Use the voidance principle. And you say that the forward evolution of this thing has to satisfy the avoidance principle. So what'll happen, you can continue and have like two, become two separate spheres, which will then by themselves shrink to points. And what you say is like any smooth sphere that I put in this thing, which is initially disjoint from this singular surface, right? This is not a surface proper, like we said before, but any smooth surface which I put in it has to avoid the forward evolution. And in that way, you can like put that, and then also put like maybe put like a little donut around here, a little torus, which also shrinks, and that like cuts away everything but the proper forward evolution. So that's one way to say how these can continue. And it kind of like snaps, becomes two spheres, which separately shrink to points. Do their own thing.
I think we should go eat dinner.
Ooh.